on 'em, and the bulls don't make good fathers. Vic's eyes lingered on the little ones. What'll happen to them? They're worth a lot of money, so we'll bottle feed 'em till they can start eating solid food. He leaned back and looked at his sister. Or Eva will. He shook his head. It's Taylor's job, but he can't seem to ignore the siren song of the open road. He wanted to get a job in town, and I thought that might slow him down a little. He rested his dark eyes on me. Where did you find him?
Up on Crook Road, about 3 miles from here.
He goes and just wanders the hills sometimes. I don't know what the hell he's doing out there. Maybe he's got a woman.
Randy looked at the broiling thunderheads, an inky blackness that stretched the sky toward the mountains like the boy's black eye, and then glanced at Eva.
Hey, could we get some more coffee?
He watched as she disappeared back into the house without a word.
I'm not kidding. He runs away all the damn time, does it about every other day. But it's gotten worse since his grandfather died.
He rested the mug on the arm of the chair and ran a forefinger over his upper lip.
They were a lot alike. He used to go fishing and hunting with the old man for days. Hell, my parents practically raised him. Eva never got married, never said who the father was.
What about you?
What about me?
Been here your whole life?
He leaned back in his chair again and smiled a sad smile. I graduated from Bozeman and took a job as a conservationist, but figured out before long that I just wasn't cut out for the academic life. Got married, got divorced, no kids. He looked at the rolling hillsides.
Dad getting older and Eva having her problems, I just decided to come back. We said nothing.
So, he settled in for the real conversation.
What can you tell me about my father?
I leaned forward.
Randy, I was hoping we could include your sister in the conversation. He nodded and called over his shoulder, Eva!
There was a moment in which I suppose she was attempting to make it appear as if she hadn't been listening at the screen door.
Yes?
She pushed the door open a bit and looked at the porch floor with the coffee pot in her hands.
So I'm assuming you're the one who packed his lunch?
I smiled, just to let her know this wasn't an episode of Perry Mason, as I held out my mug. The handwriting on the bag was somewhat female. She studied me as she approached and poured me another.
What are you saying?
The preliminary examination seems to indicate that there might have been some mistakes made with his medications, but we haven't been able to reach his physician to confirm what all he was taking. I thought maybe you might know if there was medication in the sack since you fixed his lunch. Randy turned to her sister.
Is the tray still up on his nightstand?
She nodded and disappeared.
And get the stuff from the medicine cabinet in the bathroom.
Her voice carried back to us, just as the teenagers had.
All of them?
Ha-ha, hey, we got nothing to hide.
He lowered his voice and turned back to look at us.
He got a bottle of some generic Viagra. I don't know if he ever took the stuff, but the bottle's up there. Embarrassed my sister. I guess she doesn't know how she got here, or Taylor, for that matter.
Randy, I have to ask about the possibility of an autopsy. His handsome face stiffened.
No. It might give us some definitive answers on the... My father was religious, almost as bad as my uncle. He's a traditional, and you know what that is.
I do, and I know they don't like to disturb the body in any way, but...
Well, then you shouldn't even ask me.
He looked in his empty cup. I worked in a hospital as an intern in the science lab while I was at Montana State, and I know what they do to a body in an autopsy, and I wouldn't have that done to my worst enemy. He glanced at the corrals and the building where we'd seen his uncle. Anyway, Enoch would never allow for it. Never. I let the dust settle on that one.
You know, I can override you on this.
Only if you suspect something.
He studied me.
Do you?
Not yet, but I may.
Henry Standing Bear's a friend of yours, right?
Yep.
You get him to come talk with us, and we'll consider it.
Deal.
I reached down and put my empty cup on the porch railing. Speaking of deals, do you know about the one your father had with the Cheyenne Conservancy?
Yeah, I know about it.
I think he was just feeling guilty about making it off the res and being a success. He carried big medicine for the tribe and, as I said, was getting more and more traditional as he got older. He was getting so stiff, he probably would have ended up standing in front of a cigar store. He glanced around, his eyes lingering on the clouds building up on the mountains, as if trying to push them east. Vic, figuring it was time to change the subject again and easier for her than me, asked, "What's the story on your sister?" His eyes released me with ease and turned to her.
"How do you mean? Has she been here her whole life?"
"Pretty much. She took the religion along with Enoch. That and looking after Taylor." He glanced over his shoulder, lowered his voice, and became confidential. "She didn't have a good experience in school. Just too shy. Nothing drastic. It's just that she likes it here on the ranch and doesn't like everywhere else." He took a breath and settled, looking at the hills where the wind blew the short grass like waves. "She gets worked up about stuff. So they prescribed her these pills which seem to keep her on an even keel." He imitated toking a joint. "That, and a little rock in the ganja."
"So she just stays here on the ranch?"
"Pretty much." He smiled. "I make her go with me into town once in a while, to take Taylor to work or pick him up, just so she sees that there are other people in the world." He looked over and caught us glancing at each other. "Is that what you're thinking? She's not psychologically aberrant. She's just nervous and shy, really shy." The conversation was cut short by Eva's return. She carried a plastic tray piled with pill containers and a plastic IGA bag.
"Would you like me to put these in a sack for you, or do you want to look at them now?"
I shook my head. "The sack is fine. I wouldn't know what I was looking at anyway."
She dumped them in the bag and handed them to me. "His stomach pills aren't there, so I think he must have had those with him."
"He did." I got up and straightened my back. "Can I ask a favor, Eva?"
"Yes."
"Can I have a look at your liquor cabinet?" She said nothing but glanced back at her brother, who shook his head at us. "No liquor on the place. I mean, there are a few beers in the refrigerator." "But no hard alcohol?"
"No. Why?"
"Your father had a flask on him when he died." They looked at each other, neither of them really seeming all that surprised. "Was he drinking again?" Randy sighed. "He and Enoch both had a problem. Well, we thought they had had a problem. My uncle drank himself into a hole, that's why he's here. And then he became a traditional." He turned to his sister. "Do you know where Dad hid it?"
She put her hand to her mouth. "No. No."
"It was rye whiskey, at least that's what was in the flask. And if my expert is to be trusted, it was the good stuff." I waited. "Do you think he might have had some stashed around here?" Randy stared at the planks on the porch floor. "That's how Taylor got the black eye. He's the one who snuck it in for the old man, but he wouldn't tell me where. It's possible that there's something wrong with what's in that bottle, so we'll need to test it against what was in the flask. Besides, if it's bad, you're going to want to get rid of it."
"Wait."
Eva stood and disappeared into the house again, after a few moments returning with Taylor the truant under an arm.
"The sheriff has something he'd like to ask you."
The young man stood there, not looking at me. "Hey, you helped me find the ranch. You mind helping me find something else?" That piqued his interest, and he looked up at me, all of a sudden a carbon copy of his grandfather. "I'm looking for a bottle of whiskey." He stared at me. "A bottle your grandfather might have had hidden around the house somewhere?" He continued to stare at me. His mother nudged his shoulder.
"I told the sheriff you could find anything. Do you know where a bottle like that might be?"
He swallowed and looked at his feet, all of a sudden seeming to be five.
"I promised Grandpa I wouldn't tell."
I leaned in a little. "Well, you see, there might be something wrong with what's in that bottle."
We need to take it to the lab so that they can find out what might have happened to your grandfather. There was a long pause as thunder rumbled from the west.
I don't know where it is.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Randy started to reach over, but I shook my head at him. That's okay. Figuring he was released, Taylor turned and walked away, the slap of the screen door his final teenage response. It was almost as loud as the thunder. Randy turned and looked at us.
How about I go in there and kick his skinny ass like a rented mule?
I'd rather you didn't. He shook his head.
I'll look, Sheriff.
He glanced up at his sister, who rested a hand on his shoulder. Or Eva will, one way or the other. We'll come up with it. He studied her.
You ever see Dad with a flask?
He had that antique one. You know, it was silver. Old-timey, with a leather beaded cover. I nodded.
That's the one.
I looked back at Randy. Do you mind if we take a look at his study? He rose and started toward the door.
No, come on in.
He opened the screen, and we followed Randy into an entryway where he turned to the right into what had been, I was sure, Danny Lone Elk's inner sanctum. Two large windows looked to the south, with a massive hand-laid fireplace in the corner. There was a substantive roll-top desk between the windows, along with an oak library chair. There were fossilized bones and tribal memorabilia everywhere, from dance fans and ceremonial pipes to war shields and feathered lances, but overshadowing all the relics was a huge horned shell from what must have been the largest snapping turtle ever seen in the territory. The carapace was painted and decorated with feathers and beads, unlike anything I'd ever seen, and much too large to have ever been used as anything other than a stationary objet d'art. Randy caught me studying the artifact, resting on a center table with a plexiglass box over it.
I know, a monster, isn't it?
Where did it come from?
Here at first. Then it was acquired by the Canadian Museum of History. The tribe went to war, legally that is, and reacquired a lot of these items. Dad kept a few of them with permission, but now that he's gone, I guess we'll hand him back over to the Culture Commission.
There were some smaller items surrounding the megalith, rattles and dance sticks, all made with turtle parts, each in its own plexiglass box. This stuff must be worth a fortune, Randy.
I guess. But it's the tribe's now. Dad would have wanted it that way.
Eva carefully lifted up one of the plexiglass boxes and retrieved a rattle adorned with an intricate painting of a turtle shield, feathers, and strips of horsehair and beads.
This was one of his favorites. I would come in and find him asleep in his chair with this on his chest.
There was a pause as she handled the piece, her eyes full of tears.
I used to find him in here asleep with it, every day.
She handed it to Vic, who gave it a cursory look and then handed it to me. Running my fingers along the edges of the box turtle shell, I noticed a smell emanating from the thing, something antiseptic. What's that smell? Randy stepped into the room from the doorway and took the rattle back and placed it on the stand, recovering it with the plexiglass.
They disinfected these things when they were in the museum in Canada. He half smiled. I guess if they hadn't, the mites and stuff would have eaten them all up. Smells funny, huh?
I looked around the room. Maybe you should ask to keep this one. I can't see how the tribe could be upset by you keeping just one. He nodded.
I might, for Eva has a remembrance of Dad.
He gestured toward the collection.
He kind of had a turtle fixation. Hell, he used to bring the things back and have Eva here cook 'em up turtle soup on a regular basis.
Vic made a face.
I thought he held them as sacred. Oh, he did. He'd sit on the front porch and talk to the turtles and apologize for eating them. I'm surprised he didn't have Eva cooking up pink elephant stew, what with his hallucinations.
I glanced around, wondering where I'd be if I were a bottle of whiskey. Lucian kept his liquor in a corner cabinet, but I didn't see anything like that in here. The moss rock fireplace, however,
looked remarkably clean for one that worked.
"Is that fireplace operational?"
Eva shook her head. "No." Randy stepped up and used a fingernail to pick at the moss growing on the stone. He had a spray bottle that he filled up with old beer and sprayed on the mold to keep it alive. Drove Eva here crazy.
"Who built it?"
Randy shrugged.
"I don't know. Why?" "It's a Rumford design, unique in this territory."
From my peripheral vision, I could see Vic shaking her head and placing her face in the palm of her hand, but I continued. "Benjamin Thompson, a.k.a. Count Rumford, designed the fireplace that was state-of-the-art in the late 18th century." I leaned in and looked up the flue. "Jefferson had them built in Monticello, and Thoreau said they were one of the modern conveniences most taken for granted." Vic's muffled voice sounded through her fingers. "So?" I reached a hand up the flue, feeling my way. The fireplaces were tall and shallow to reflect more heat into the room, and had streamlined throats that carried the smoke away, but one of the truly inspired aspects of the design was a shelf that redirected the incoming cold air and then reflected it back up with the heated air from the fire. Finding what I was looking for, I carefully pulled the almost full bottle of E.H. Taylor straight rye from the flue. Also makes for a magnificent hiding place when not in use. Under the gathering gloom of thunderheads and the overcast sky, we said our goodbyes. "Hey, Randy, do you mind if we take a look at the dig where they found Jen on our way out?" He leaned on a post.
"Why?"
"No particular reason. It's just that with all the excitement the other day, we didn't get close enough to see anything, and with all the excitement in town now, I'd like to talk about it from a more informed position."
"Sure."
He pointed a finger at me. "No souvenirs, though."
"I promise."
"You better hurry. That storm's coming in and the washes flood if there's enough rain, and those roads get like axle grease once they get wet." He studied the angry skies. "You think you can find it from here?" We started off the porch.
"You can loan us your nephew."
He laughed as his sister followed us to the edge of the porch, clutching the coffee mugs to her chest with a worried look.
"I want to apologize for Taylor. He's having a really hard time with his grandpa's death."
Randy draped his arm over her shoulder. "You better get going," Eva continued, "even to the point where he thinks..." He interrupted.
"They don't need to hear that stuff."
Vic, never one to shy away from asking a question, didn't.
"What stuff?"
The woman's head dropped, but we could still hear her voice.
"He keeps saying that he sees things."
"Eva, they're going to think we're all crazy."
She looked up past us where the thick smell of ozone permeated the air.
"That he keeps seeing his grandfather standing on the hills out here, watching him."
Chapter 6.
I am officially creeped out.
"Why?"
She shook her head and then turned to look at me as if I were the sole member and president of the Absaroka County chapter of Stupid.
That kid is having the same visions you are."
Without thinking, I found myself looking in the rearview mirror to make sure that Taylor wasn't running along behind us.
"It's a pretty generic vision."
"Maybe the two of you are tuned into the same channel from Strange."
She lodged her boots onto my dash.
"I noticed you didn't want to hang around and discuss it with him. You know, compare notes."
I ignored her chatter and watched as she scanned the hills in the available light that made them glow just before the storm.
"I want a vision of my own."
"Well, you go ahead and get yourself one."
"Is that how it works?"
I tried not to smile as we sped along with the wind gusts buffeting the truck.
"I don't think so."
She turned in the seat and stared at me.
"Well, fuck special you. How come you and the kid get to run around communing with the netherworld while the rest of us mere mortals slog along?"
I humped my shoulders in a shrug.
"How should I know how it works?" "Because you have them like clockwork, like the 11 o'clock news."
I actually gave it some thought as I slowed for one of the few turns on the road. "Maybe you should talk to Henry.
He can give me a vision?"
"I doubt it, but if you're looking to have one, he might help you find it in yourself."
She turned further in the seat. That doesn't sound hopeful.
I think some people are more susceptible.
Her tone sharpened. What, I'm not susceptible?
You're pretty rational.
What's that got to do with it?
I think you have to be open to, I guess, influences.
Bullshit.
No, that's not what I mean.
No, I mean it's still bullshit that you get to have visions and I don't.
I glanced at her. You might do well to keep in mind that every time these types of things have happened to me, I've been somewhat impaired. She sighed.
As in, ready to die?
Something like that. She went back to looking out the windshield. Yeah, well, I'm not so sure I want a vision if I have to be bleeding to death to get it. I watched her as we sped along, her eyelids drooping the way they always did whenever we were on one of our extended county tours. I began wondering how much sleep she was getting, given the psychological toll of the last few months. I was feeling a little unmoored myself and was thinking that even with all the complications, I was looking forward to seeing Katie and Lola. I would have preferred a more quiet time with them, but those seemed to be rarer and rarer these days. I spotted the gate where we'd gone through the first time, when we'd first seen the dinosaur dig site, and slowed the bullet, but now three strands of barbed wire blocked our way. I pulled to a stop and climbed out as dog whined, and I shushed him, trying to let my undersheriff grab a few winks. The gate was an old lever type, and I flipped it and dragged the pole and wire wide enough to drive through. I stood there for a moment, wondering if we really had time for this kind of goose chase. The wind was picking up, and the storm had eaten the mountains. It was probably less than a half hour away, but seeing as how we were already here, I figured we could take the extra time. I would just make sure I parked far away from any washes so that we'd be able to make it back to town. I watched the clouds and remembered something Lucian, the old Doolittle raider, had told me once, that if we could see what the wind was doing up there, none of us would ever get on a plane again. Momentarily distracted, I had a feeling I was being watched, and turned on a cowboy heel, floating my gaze over the undulating hills. Maybe that's what happens when you invest so much of yourself in something. Whether it's a person or a place, your soul is loath to leave it. I looked for Danny's outline on those hills, and thought maybe his ghost or spirit was still here, looking over the place that had been his. Maybe you stayed until you realized it wasn't yours anymore. And then you went on your way. Vic studied me as I got back in the truck. So what about the daughter? It was as though she'd been reading my mind. Maybe she was getting closer to a vision than she thought. Katie?
Eva.
Maybe not. What about her? She yawned and covered it with a hand, singing in a fine soprano voice she'd inherited from her mother.
Them bones, them dry bones.
A little strange, wouldn't you say? I pulled through the gate, got out and closed it, and drove toward the ridge where Taylor had taken a few pot shots at Omar's armored SUV. I guess.
Don't you think we should follow up and see who's prescribing her with fuck it all and why?
I would imagine that Freebird, Danny Lone Elk's doctor up in Hardin, is prescribing for her, too, and in answer to your next question, no. Isaac didn't mention having gotten hold of him, so I'd imagine he hasn't answered his call just yet.
Are we going to Hardin?
Not unless we have to. It's not exactly Paris.
She spoke philosophically.
I haven't ever been.
Paris? She punched my shoulder.
Hardin!
Well, like I said, don't get your hopes up.
I eased the truck to a stop, and the three of us climbed out, carefully following the two-track up the hillside to Jen, the dinosaur's next-to-last resting place. I noticed Vic had left her jacket in the truck.
Are you sure you don't want to bring your coat?
I gestured toward the dark clouds, strung in front of the bighorns like a royal curtain to the purple bourne.
It might get a little rough before long.
She kept coming. I'm not planning on spending the night. The afternoon air was cooling rapidly, and I was starting to think that it might not be rain, but rather hail that we might be getting, as I stopped by the large wooden box that the paleontologists used to store their tools.
She puffed up behind me and rested an elbow on the crate, which was as big as a refrigerator.
Well, we can use the humidity.
I started, turned, and looked at her.
What? You say that all the time. I'm trying to get with the Western Code thing, okay?
She pushed off the box and passed me, and I watched the back of her as she worked her way up the trail toward the dig. When I caught up with her, she was standing next to a depression in the top of the ridge where the ground and surrounding rock was terraced in all directions. You could see that the majority of the T-Rex was still there, somewhat uncovered but very much intact, minus the head, of course. The great creature was turned in on herself, with a massive pelvis at the center and the elongated tail circling up and over the back. There were a few other bones, a large femur and vertebrae, scattered a little away, and I couldn't help but walk to the overhang where Jen had surprised Jennifer. It was as if the old girl had tucked herself into a modified fetal position. It was difficult to imagine anything that could kill the undisputed 7-ton queen of her time, but life had a way, perhaps even then, of humbling all of us. From personal experience, I was pretty sure it must have had something to do with her offspring, one of the more than a few thoughts I decided to keep from present company. I called Vic over to a small trail that led toward a narrow gap in the underside of the cliff. She joined me, and I pointed up to where the 2-talon claw appeared to be reaching out from within the rock and time and space. Look!
Holy shit!
She stretched out a hand, touching the nearest claw, and it was almost as if some interspecies karma was taking place. It wasn't a reach to see the DNA strand that might have somehow connected them. Not hard to see Vic's most ancient lineage being a tyrannosaur. Evidently her line of thought was running along the same trail.
So if I was a T-Rex, what were you?
I played along. Probably a brontosaurus. They call them apatosaurus these days. Means deceptive lizard, by the way.
What, they got married and changed their names?
Remember Cope and Marsh?
Oh, no.
Yep, Marsh was in such a hurry to scoop Cope that he classified a smaller, juvenile version of the same creature as a completely different